The Deep Analysis Podcast.
Hey there, it's the Deep Analysis Podcast, and this is part two of our conversation with Bernadette, the CEO of Alfresco. Enjoy. We are all talking about AI, but we've talked to a lot of enterprises, and we've found very few who are really doing anything. And it seems to be...
I read a stat. I'm going to probably struggle to remember it accurately, but I'll be in the right ballpark. I read a stat, you know, end of the year, sort of people making predictions and doing analysis of the market. And it said 8% of CIOs have actually spent money and have AI in production. So it is a small percentage.
And,
for sure.
And you know, I'm obviously just wildly guessing here, but based on our anecdotal evidence, because we haven't done sort of proper survey data, the amount of people who've told us they're doing AI, and then when we look at it, it's like, I wouldn't really call that AI.
Yeah, sometimes there's some advanced analytics.
Yeah,
that
some
people
advanced
are...
analytics, some very simple machine learning.
Yeah.
So the potential is there. I'm totally, I mean, you know, we've just invested months and months and months building a training course, got a book coming out next year. You know, so we're obviously converts and we want it to happen, but we're just fascinated by the lack of education, the lack of understanding of how, I won't say easy, but how accessible AI actually is today. I'm just wondering how you see that playing out, because you talked about processes at the beginning.
Yes.
As I say, I was the workflow guy back in the day. It just seems such an obvious fit.
It really is. And, you know, everybody, when you talk about the process and content market, people sort of automatically go to the content side, I think, right now with AI and auto classification. Frankly, that will be very ho-hum and table stakes here very, very soon. We actually see much more interesting opportunities around process and AI. Because just take that records management and information government example we were talking about. You're right, it's the rules engine. But we all know that rules engines, even though you try to make them simple for, you know, the citizen developer to be able to implement the rules, and as soon as you put the rule in place, it's out of date. Also, if you look and you join up another piece of information, which is every process BPM provider out there has always had some form of analytics, because they've always wanted to be looking at where are the inefficiencies and bottlenecks in the process so that you can optimize. But that was always the holy grail, but it was never realized. And so you take a look at how you could apply AI in the process arena, and why do we need a rules engine?
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you.
I think you can leapfrog, and I think you can make it a lot easier. So yes, you can get process optimization, but much more than process optimization, you can get AI designing some of these processes once you've got, again, some weight behind you in terms of you know, just the number of processes that you're running.
Yeah, and also with process management and AI, and again, coming back to the fundamentals that we've sort of learnt the hard way this past year, is I'll go as far as to say I don't think we spoke to, and apologies to anybody we spoke to who takes this the wrong way, I don't think we spoke to a single enterprise who'd really understood that AI is an ongoing process. It's not like a traditional IT project. You don't have a go live date and walk away.
Right.
You monitor it. You nurture it over time. And again, for process management, if you start off automating 80% and you've got 20% exceptions, over time, you can get that down to 1 or 2%. Whereas the traditional approach, it never gets any better, frankly. I mean, it can, but
exactly. And then you had various variations of the exception handling process at the end as the final stage of your process. And, you know, you'd have 20 iterations of that, which was, you know, a little archaic. I agree. I think there's a lot that can be done there. But the other aspect when you look at AI is, if you think about how you interact with, I mean, yes, we've all got Alexa now, pretty much in our home. Nobody, you can't be on a WebEx or you know, a screen share session without somebody mentioning the name, and they're all light up in the background. But if you think about it, most ways that we interact with any company that we do business with is the form. via the web.
Yeah.
And that's also pretty antiquated when you think about
yes.
it. So, you know, a much more natural way for us to interact, to kick off a process, if you like, would be just with a chatbot. Mm. So we also see the application of AI in conjunction with non-traditional user experiences as well, mm-hmm. Just to make things, you know, much more human. I mean, it's humanizing it's humanizing our work process, because we all want our work life to be more like our home life anyway.
Yeah, it depends from an IT perspective. Like.
Well, that's true.
No, but I mean, I think it's a good point. I think it's very interesting. And, you know, as an analyst, you ride the waves of the hype, you know. But when you've been around as long as I have, you also know that when somebody says it's going to be big in 2 years, maybe 10, maybe 6, if you're really lucky. But, I mean, we had RPA. That was I won't say it was a flash in the pan, because it's definitely still there, but I would say, you know, I'm bringing that in because of the process management. Mm-hmm. They were pushing that they had machine learning. Most of them didn't. But it's very early days for it.
It is. It definitely is very early days for it, for sure. And you've got, you know, some companies, some potential customers that are on the bleeding edge of that, that you start having those discovery conversations with. I'd probably put that in the same kind of category as maybe some of the blockchain stuff actually right now.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, so a good friend of mine I've known in many years, just because I might be giving away some corporate secret here, I won't name him, you know who you are, but he's the CEO of an AI company, and they do work in financial services. Terrific little company. And, you know, what he's told me is the biggest frustration, and this is bigger for the whole digital transformation thing, is we go in, we see gross inefficiencies, we say, that shouldn't be a manual process. We can fix that. And then we find out that somebody senior, oh no, they've got great lofty ambitions of amazing transformation. That stuff, no, they're fine. And I've even heard that with others, where it's like you've got the traditional document scanning and you know, when you say that might be a good place to start, wow, that's, I don't know, I'll be careful with my analogies, but you know, that's a really quick way to end a party. Nobody wants to know that they've got grand visions at one senior level which are unrealistic.
I mean, that's the art as opposed to the science, I guess, of what we do, or what our customers do, which is I'm just a huge believer in, you've got to have the quick wins along the way that are the stepping stones to the grand vision. And if you've got a disconnect between those two, you're going to have a lot of money burned and not a lot of, you know, stakeholders in the organization truly, truly happy. But I also think that goes back to the thing that we started off with, which is, when all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Yep. So if everything takes multi-millions and multiple, you know, years, then I can understand people putting off those smaller bite-sized projects. And I think everybody should have this as the goal, which is, you know, if you've got a bite-sized content problem or process to bite off on, then you should be able to do it and do it quickly. There was a bank that put us through our paces, and they did a four-month proof of concept. And in that 4 month period, they, with those other two providers, they had one process with one step, with one form and one small integration automated. With us, they'd got four classifications of processes completely automated and in production in that same period. So it's a no-brainer. Of course, they brought us into the environment. They already had wall-to-wall of the other two providers, but they brought us in because those other two providers couldn't do what we could do at that speedy end of the market. So it enabled them to service a lot more of their internal stakeholders because of the speed at which we enabled them to go and compose those process and content applications as they went, pretty rapidly, and, you know, hook that technology into a microservices architecture, and in the end put it up in the cloud. So
one of the things I've done over the years, because I am, you know, like the record with the needle stuck, whenever I've been involved in a product selection or advising someone on how to structure a project, you know, one of the things I always say to them is, the lowliest person in this organization is quite likely to be the one who will completely screw your project up, right? Involve them from the beginning. Don't be scared of them. Involve them from the beginning. And I say that because I've seen that happen, right? The other week, I was chatting to somebody, and this is all very confidential, so I have to be very careful what I say here, but it was to do with an M&A thing. And they were saying, document scanning bureaus? They still exist.
It's amazing. I know.
Oh, they still exist.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
They still exist. But the point is, if you don't start with those elements of your business, how do you really leverage AI and the cloud and everything at the end?
I completely agree. The interesting thing is we've got certain elements of these converging now, which is, for example, again, when we were back in Vegas in November at reInvent, we were one of the launch customers for AWS for a new service that they're bringing to market, which is called Textract, which is modern OCR to us. But the difference between traditional OCR and Textract is there's an application of AI in the Textract service such that, you know, it can recognize that a W-2 is a form. Mm-hmm. It can recognize multiple columns and not read, you know, not take the two lines from two corresponding columns and roll them together because they think it's a sentence. So there's an intelligence with the Textract service that you can then do so much more with your content or kick off a process or, and so therefore there's again an opportunity here, I think, for some leapfrogging. When you go to the cloud, you can leverage a service like that. Frankly, you know, over time, you will be able to get rid of that document scanning bureau.
Yeah, I mean, so every year now for I think the last 18 years, I've been a judge for the UK's, even though I don't live in the UK, Document Management Awards every year. And I love doing it because you get all these submissions and you go through them. And the first thing you do is go make a cup of tea because you're just depressed. you read them and you think, this could have been submitted 18 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, don't get me wrong. Great company, done a great job. Somebody's very happy in the health service, right? So they're not shuffling paper anymore. Get it. But occasionally you get one, and I won't say their name, but you get one where you think, wow, that's brilliant. Oh my God, you know, that is just brilliant. Forms recognition, reinvented, etc. But why is it that we have these breakthroughs? We have these, it doesn't matter whether they're niche vendors or they're tools from big events, it doesn't matter. But these tools are there today. We're still not leveraging them.
It's a good point. I mean, a lot of this technology has been about for a long time. If you think about just like you were saying, we've still got, you know, major corporations that I won't name by name, but you know, their urgent business problem they're coming to us, you know, is paperless and then fill in the blank.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I still find it amazing today. But I think that with some of the newer technologies that we've got now, the coming together of cloud as a foundational element for some of the AI stuff that you can then do, I think could enable and hopefully will inspire, if we all do our jobs properly, companies and organizations to take a look at some of those things differently. I mean, we've talked about some of the far out stuff with AI, but I think there's some many more pedestrian type use cases that I think are feasible today. If you're an insurance company, let's say a medical insurance company, there's you know, claims matching, you know, multiple claims coming in. Are they the same? Are they not? The documents that you're getting from the providers are looking pretty similar, but are they? There's a document matching. There's a whole, you know, some of this doesn't have to be rocket science. And I think that's part of our issue in the industry. We paint the vision sometimes so big because we get excited about it and this is what we do. But I think we have to kind of bring it back down to earth and say, and you know what, guys, you can get started today. And here are three examples that are absolutely relevant for your industry and your sector.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think, and again, plugging our AI training course, please buy it, aim.org. no, but I mean, seriously, in that, you know, that's what we're saying very much so is that, you know, forget the AI magic box. What about matching documents. Mm-hmm. How's about matching a purchase order, a delivery note, and an invoice automatically every time? That would be huge.
But then you take that and you look at the conversions of process and content, which is why we've got the digital business platform, our Fresco digital business platform, and you look at those two things coming together then, and that matching, and then what's the process? What's that next step? So bring it all together.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think there's just a disconnect between sort of senior management who still believe in the magic box. They've probably watched too many of the IBM Watson ad on TV. You just talk to it and it'll solve all your problems for you. You know, it's going to be simple as that.
I tell you, the guys that get it, though, in the organizations are the enterprise architects.
Yes. And you know what? That's interesting. I'd not thought of that, but I can absolutely agree with it. I think... you know, they're the ones who've been thinking about content services long before Gartner came up with the term. I mean, you know, services, enterprise architecture as a concept is all about services. So makes perfect sense that they would. Mm. And I think they're often underestimated, actually.
So where they have a voice and where they're regarded as the trusted advisor by the business, where, like I said, where you've got that connective tissue coming together, I think they can, whether it's the solution architect, the enterprise architect, the application architect, those guys really help bridge, I think, some of those language gaps that exist.
I think they did, and that's maybe a nice segue onto what's turned out to be a controversial subject for me throughout my career. But they're the bridge, as you said, and I think, you know, they were the bridge bringing open source into the enterprise as well in many cases, right? Because they would say, well, why would I need to build this? This is available here. You know. The open source thing is an interesting one, and I've locked horns with John Newton over the years on this one, although I think John just likes to argue for the sake of it often, as so do I, actually, so we make a good pair.
I'm Switzerland on this one.
That's fine. No, I love John. John and I go back a long, long time, and I love chatting with him. But I think the thing is that the open source discussion has really changed. I mean, it was essentially a political discussion back in the day. You know, it was the evil Microsoft and the evil IBM. We're going to do it ourselves out of our basements, right? You know, that was sort of those early days.
Yes.
But today, I guess it's different. Do you still see it as a differentiator?
Oh, huge. I agree with you, though. I think we benefit as a company from the halo effect for those people that remember those sort of political days. Yes, it's a huge differentiator. And the reason being is because it's about speed and speed of innovation. It really is about innovation, the speed of that innovation. And companies that get that, they naturally gravitate towards us or other open source solutions. And what I mean by that is, I'll give you a great example, the FAA. We were working with the FAA with one of our federal partners, CSRA, and it was in the early days of the application development framework. And they needed some capability that didn't exist yet in the product, and it was to do with 508 compliance, the Accessibility Act in the US. And so they decided to build it themselves, combination of some of the FAA folks and CSRA, and they built it themselves. And the reason they could build it themselves is because, being open source, they had access to our source code. And then once they'd done that, they then wanted to contribute it back to the community and to us so that we could, productize it even into the enterprise version. And so that's an example whereby with open source, you don't have to be bound by the roadmap of the product vendor, the ISV. If you're passionate about something, you need it for your development schedule, then you get access to the source code and you don't have that time lag for when it may be available on our roadmap versus when you need it. So you have the power of not just our engineers and our development community, but a whole host of people out there when you get this contribution of that intelligence and IP back. So it really is about innovation. It's no longer about the political battle. It's no longer about it being seemingly free, because nothing's ever free. You put your own sweat equity into it. So it really is. So I would say open source is important from that primary perspective. But the other thing is, I mean, we've been open source since day one. And we had the content Alfresco open source project, and then the Activity, which is now a process engine project. But more recently, we started a new open source project, which is the application development framework. Mm-hmm. And this to us is huge differentiation as well, because kind of going back to the earlier conversation, you know, years ago, one size fits all user experience was fine. It's what people expected. They didn't expect to be able to have different interfaces for different people and persona and people in different roles in their organization. Now they do. Especially with the design thinking sort of bandwagon that many organizations are on right now. And so what we've found over the years was that, again, perhaps because we are open source, people were developing their own front ends and UIs. Mm. And so the application development framework, and it is an open source project and it's an integral part of our digital business platform these days, but it enables organizations to quickly, because of that toolkit, be able to develop the beautiful experiences for different parts of their organization so that they've got just what they need and no more. Mm. So I think the speed of innovation, I think the growth, frankly, of the open source market, because I think it is going through a resurgence. And then, you know, that kind of flows through, I think, the rest of the ethos of the company around open standards, open APIs, and being a natural part of the API economy right now. So very important for us.
And so sort of wrapping up a bit, ECM in 10 years' time, BPM in 10 years' time. I mean, is it all open source and Amazon and AI driven? I mean, you know, it's still... I always push back on people, you know, when it's got to be the most quoted blog post in our industry ever. ECM is dead, it's kaput, etc. Because, of course, everybody's arms went up and go, well, hold on, it's about a $4 billion business. That's not peanuts, you know. And it's still actually growing.
Yeah.
It is changing, though. It's changing dramatically, whether that's into services or the cloud or a mixture of those things or whatever. But, I mean, you know, in 10 years' time or beyond that, whatever, but the volume of content is not going to fall away.
No.
There's no evidence that's ever going to happen. So systems that were built in 1998 and they could manage up to 500 million documents, couldn't really, but they said they could. Now that's not that big a deployment,
no.
Right? So... 10 years, 20 years' time, we're talking tens of billions? I don't know. But where do you see our industry going? Because, I mean, the point being, that's not going to change. Processes are going to continue. Volumes of files are going to continue to grow and grow and grow. People aren't going to start throwing stuff away. That's never happened before, so it's probably going to start happening now.
Right.
How do we adapt to that? Because it's clear that the first generation systems... Well, they were first-generation systems.
Yeah.
They did a good job at the time. But what do the next-generation systems look like that are going to scale and I mean, how are they going to be different?
I think they'll probably be vastly different. I mean, I don't think the terminology ECM and BPM necessarily will exist in 10 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there will continue to be a blurring of the lines, not just between the process and content disciplines, but into the broader ecosystem in the organization. I mean, gone are the days of having that siloed system that you sit it in the corner and it's content or it's process. It, like I said, you know, that customer I was speaking to, they need to integrate it into the microservices architecture. They need to integrate it into the fabric of the organization. So it will look differently. It will be in the cloud. That doesn't just mean SaaS. Because there are a lot of companies out there that believe that their differentiation is built and not bought. So I think there's going to be a place for SaaS. There's going to be a place for content in the virtual private cloud and process in the virtual private cloud, running in Lambda and, you know, processless and all of that sort of good stuff. But I think the lines will be much more blurred. And I don't think they will be individual disciplines necessarily, like we try to categorize them as today.
Mm. Will there still be a role for the non-techie person? There's a perception that that's not a good place to be heading in if that's your career path.
Oh, I fundamentally believe that, yes, there absolutely will be. Now, the caveat that I would put on that is... it will not look like the center of excellence of the 2000s, where it was people in a room that wanted to wallpaper corridors with swim lanes of process charts. And that.
I actually did.
To that. Me, I know, I know, but I think it's dead, yeah. And you've all obviously yeah. realized that's dead. You moved on, so it will have a different incarnation. But yes, because there is always that need of the guiding of the line of business user. There'll be a certain amount you want them to do on their own, and then there's a certain complexity that you will hit where you will need somebody to guide them. That will be the expert.
And I think I believe that too. I mean, one of the things we've been pushing on the AI front, but it's not just on the AI front, is that if you don't have people who understand how your organization operates, if you don't have people who understand what change management means, right? If you don't have business analysts, you can have all the technology in the world, ain't going to work.
Yeah.
But there are fewer and fewer of those available. I mean, you talked about wallpapering the rooms with flowcharts. I used to use Aris, if you remember, Dr. Shear, and turned out, literally could cover walls, right? To explain the simplest things sometimes. Those days have gone, but I feel sometimes those skills have gone too.
Perhaps a little too much. In some instances, yes. But you know what? There's always the trend of what was old is new.
Yeah.
So things come back around, they just come back around a little differently.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think if I have a point here, it's that I would really encourage people to be looking at this industry. I think it's, I don't think it's dead. I don't think it's kaput. Its names will change. But it's set for a big inflection point. I think it's set for the mainstream, which it never really was.
I agree. That's a great way of putting it. That is a great way of putting it. And that doesn't mean commoditization either. Mm. It means proliferation.
Yeah.
Because, and I think if there was any goal and aspiration that I would have, and we actually realize this with a good number of our customers today, and that is that, you know, the content management system or their process engine is not something that after they mention it, they curse it. Because if you go back to the 90s and the aughties, that's what people did. Yeah. And so as a, you know, in one of my previous lives, I was forced to use one. I'm like, I'm not using that thing. Mm. Yeah. I don't, it's almost like asking me to use a typewriter. I'm not using that thing. So part of what we strive for is that, again, that's why that user experience is so important to the change management, because you don't need change management if there's great adoption out of the gate.
Absolutely.
So therefore, we focus on great adoption, which is why the application development framework is so critical, we think, to the future of our customers gaining what they truly want out of this, which is, yes, they want to change their business, they want to get more efficient, they want to continue to be compliant, but they want to have their users adopt this so that they can reap the business benefits. Mm. And so therefore, I think the user experience aspect of what we do from a content, from a process, from a digital business platform perspective is absolutely key to making this mainstream, and coupled with the speed. So the experience and the speed, and you only get that if you're architected the right way from the ground.
Yeah, absolutely, and if you have, as I say, the soft skills, which I think is a rather dismissive term, actually, but if you have the soft skills to actually, you know, relate to an organization, and I think so. I really do believe that. I don't know how many more years I've got left in this industry, but I really sincerely hope that anybody who's listening to this or reads the staff or does the training, you know, that they realize that this is a great place to start your career and grow it. And I keep saying that because there's so much negativity at times about it.
You know, Alan, I am more excited today about this industry than I was when I got into it back in 2010. That's probably because we're, you know, outpacing the market CAGR in terms of our growth, which is always a beautiful thing. But I it's because I see the number of customers and organizations that are really doing some spectacular things. Mm. And so I agree. I think you can get a broad panacea for how an organization functions when you're in the process and the content space. Mm. Because when you look at digital transformation, and yes, it's an overused term, but everybody out there is on some sort of a journey. And therefore, if you go back to that notion of process-led transformation, they all have content with it. It gives you such a fantastic grounding in how any organization works, any knowledge or human-led organization works, that I think it would be a great foundation upon which to build a career.
Well, thanks so much. This has obviously been one of the longer podcasts we've recorded, and I hope you enjoyed it. I think we covered a lot of ground there. We've got tentatively lined up conversations with the BPM legend, Sandy Kelmsley. We've got Rich Lowers about information governance and the challenge of Amazon. Possibly Dave Giordano of TSG, who many of you in the industry will know, who's been around a long time and always has a good opinion, or a strong opinion at least, to share with us. So a lot coming up. Again, as always, if you want to reach out to us, do so. We're pretty easy to find on social media, or just email me at aps@deep-analysis.net. Until the next time, look after yourself. Bye.